Hare Krishna. I'm going to read this morning one verse, Canto 3, Chapter 27, text number 2, because yesterday we read text number 1. And the last verse of Chapter 26. So a little refresh. The title of the chapter is Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. This chapter is Understanding Material Nature. Is really strong in presenting Sankhya philosophy. And we heard the concluding verses where Kapila, and then in the purports, Prabhupada is putting it all together. Where does all this analysis of material nature fit into devotional service? Like, it's almost like that's over there and this is over here, so what does that have to do with this? And the message we heard. Anybody remember the message we heard yesterday? Message?
Devotional service is the key, and the different aspects of the material nature and how to take shelter of devotional service.
Okay, that's you want to add to that?
I am very, very much touched by the analogy that it's given there, that the sun is not disturbed by the
unsteadiness of the water.
Reflection of the sun
is not, reflection of the sun seems disturbed, but really sun is not at all disturbed by the waves or the.
Okay, so that's one piece. I'll just quickly try to put this together so that we can go on. The goal is bhakti. The goal of all of that analysis is bhakti. Bhakti is like the locomotive that pulls the train. So it's not that Sankhya drives bhakti, it's the other way around. With ignorance, we become implicated. With knowledge, we become extricated or detached. This Vedic couplet, Jnana Vairagya. With knowledge comes detachment. And what's the purpose of the detachment? This has to do specifically with the mind, and you'll see how it connects with this morning's verse. When the mind, through knowledge, becomes detached, then the mind can contemplate the Supreme. There's a message of contemplation upon the Supersoul. This is Satya Yuga. And in the process of the four yugas, the Yuga Dharma for Satya Yuga is what? Meditation. So in order to meditate upon the Supersoul or the Supreme, there has to be detachment. How do you get the detachment to keep the mind fixed on Supersoul? You'll do your meditation when your mind is mumbo-jumbo. No good. So the mind can be fixed, there has to be detachment. How do you get the detachment? Through knowledge. How do you get the knowledge? Understanding what's what. Properly. Not driven by false ego in the modes of nature, what's what. But transcendental, what's what. So, seeing the connection of all things with their source of emanation. This is Vedanta. Yes? Vedanta is the end of all knowledge. What's the source of everything? What's it all about? What's what? We take birth in ignorance, and real knowledge is to understand what's what. Everything comes from Krishna. That's what's what. So all this chapter 26 is really detailed, kind of tedious, and it connects all the different parts of creation with the Virat Rupa. And the Virat Rupa is an expansion of who's an expansion of who's an expansion of Govinda, you know, the Supreme. So it's getting, it's disconnecting from ignorance to the point of knowledge, of seeing how it's like anatomy. You know, the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone's connected to the... So, you know, how the whole structure works. All the parts of everything that, you know, physical creation is part of the Virat Rupa. That's chapter 26. And detail and detail and detail, rather than just saying it, it's detail. How it's connected. And that Virat Rupa is a type of meditation that if one meditates properly, one can see. Anatomy is a good example, because when a physician looks at a body, they don't just see the body like, you know, an object for enjoyment, or it pleases me, it displeases me. It's anatomy. They have a profession. They're medical doctors, and they have to see how this connects with that, and this is out of place, so we have to correct it, and so on. That's their profession. So, creation has its purpose also, and it's to correct the errant mentality of a living entity of being separate from Krishna and being an enjoyer separate from Krishna, because that's our bhav. We're here because of that. We want to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's the problema. We want to enjoy separately. How do you cut that? Through knowledge. I mean, you can't just say, like to a child, don't enjoy separately. It's not going to work. How do you train the child to see other than like a child? Through knowledge. So, Sankhya is a training to see the connection of all things with the source of all things. Knowledge. Detachment, meditation, devotion. That's how chapter 26 ends. And chapter 27 begins by at least in Prabhupada's purport, he's now introducing the bhakti principle of how bhakti does all of that. Doesn't mean that a bhakta, we're trying to become, being trained to become bhaktas. Bhagavad Gita has that conclusion. Sarvadharmam pridyaja mamekam sharanam braja. Become manmana bhava mad bhakto. Bhagavad Gita is teaching bhakti, ultimately, the topmost rung on the yoga ladder. That's Bhagavad Gita. But there's elements of Sankhya, isn't it? This is just some appreciation of the correlating, how Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam correspond. In simple language, graduate study. Simple language. So, in Bhagavad Gita, there's Sankhya. In Bhagavatam, there's Sankhya. But what's the goal? Is it just analyze and become a jnani? No. The goal is, from knowledge, see things through the eyes of knowledge rather than through the eyes of false ego. This is directly text 2, the one we're going to be reading this morning. There's a consequence if one sees through false ego without knowledge. And you get implicated in you know, illusion and suffering because of that ignorance. And, you know, and whining and moaning and complaining about, oh, it's suffering. We did it to ourselves. You know, it's a choice that we can make to be in knowledge or to be in ignorance. To be like a child, born because the child wants independent, the soul wants independent enjoyment, so he gets a package to try it. And then education is to detach one from that spirit. Successful parenting includes the affection for the child. And real affection is taking the soul of that child through the stage of maturity to transcendence, to connection with Supreme. Sankhya has its place. The what's what analysis. To bring about knowledge, to bring about detachment, to bring about fixing the mind properly, otherwise we can't, and then awakening of devotion, and then a life of full devotion. In, just conclude this review with something that comes into text 2, found in text 1, as Prabhupada speaks about proprietorship. So I'm just going to read that part of the purport of text 2, because in purport of, excuse me, text 1, because in text 2 he says it like 5 times. And proprietor, so in short, proprietorship isn't like we think. It's the message, the word proprietorship is far more subtle and more binding even than just like proprietorship of this is mine, like, you know, my car and my house and my bank balance and my stuff, my shoes and my dhoti and my stuff, my computer. Not that kind of proprietorship. I mean, that flows from the other kind. So what does Prabhupada mean when he uses the proprietorship term? It's very important in order to advance in Krishna consciousness. Besides just, you know, the false kind of proprietorship is give stuff up. Prapancha kataya bhujya hari sambandhu vasana mamukshu bi prityago vairagyam palgu katyate. It's palgu vairagya. Just give stuff up. Now you become detached. Just give stuff up. No. Well, it, you know, that's interesting, but that's not what detachment is. It's not the kind of detachment or the relinquishing the false sense of proprietorship just by giving stuff up. That's too easy. It's external. There's the internal. And it's you know, the connection is it already belongs to somebody, so how can I give it up? Giving up the false sense of proprietorship is assigning consciously who the real proprietor is. And if you following that, if we can actually accomplish that, it's real easy. You use things in the service of he who is actually the proprietor of stuff. It's a whole other world, world of devotion to Krishna. And as we can practice it here, that entitles us to enter the spiritual world. Because we're here in this mature world because we wanted to be the false proprietor and thus the enjoyer. It's really, you know, it's subtle. But it's not just about stuff. It's about possessiveness. Because with possession comes entitlement to be the enjoyer of something. Like, why do people steal? Then they have something and then they can enjoy that something. Even if it means they go and hawk that something, you know, they steal somebody's whatever it is, and then they go to a pawn shop and or what, however they sell things. Like in New York, it's there was a period of time I'm now knowledgeable about, at least because it was in our neighborhood. There was a business where people would steal cars, ship them off to South America, you know, without titles, and then like forge a title and then sell the cars in South America. That was how they made their livelihood. But it's just about proprietorship. You know, it's a crime, but it just has to do with the worldly way of proprietorship. You got some money, you can buy a car. You got, you know, anyway, you get the idea. But this is the subtle features of proprietorship, and here's how Prabhupada uses the term. Well, part of the purport of chapter of text 1. In the previous chapter, Lord Kapila Dev has concluded that simply by beginning the discharge of devotional service, one can attain detachment and transcendental knowledge. Right? Detachment and transcendental knowledge. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitika. Through devotional service, knowledge and detachment come. That's, you know, chapter 1, text 2. This is canto 3, concluding the same thing. So if we just need devotional service, and we, so why the Sankhya stuff? Well, one can engage in devotional service foolishly. We see it. Engage in devotional service with a wrong conception, with an egoistic conception, or an attached conception, or a smouty, smoky, cloudy, some kind of misconception. Then people go on merrily, merrily misguided devotional service. So knowledge is to give proper direction to that devotional service. Very, very much like a child being educated how to do things. Especially if, in this case, if the child is becoming a spiritually guided living entity, a matured living entity in devotion. So it's seeing things properly in relation to Krishna, kind of devotional service. That's where Sankhya fits in. Now this little reference, a person who is detached from the modes of material nature remains just like the sun reflected on water. When the sun is reflected on water, the movement of the water or its coolness or unsteadiness of the water cannot affect the sun. So the sun metaphor applies in this case to the living entity that has proper knowledge. The world around us can be moving, but the devotee can remain detached from those movements. That detachment comes from proper knowledge as opposed to misidentifying with matter. Clear? So now the proprietorship word comes towards the bottom. Well, it has to do, in general, it has to do with fruitive. From I comes mine. That's proprietorship, mine. So, from the misidentification of the body to be the self, or I am part of this material creation, and all the other designations that go with it, I'm American, or Indian, or whatever, whatever. I'm Russian, you're Ukrainian, and, you know, and I'm the Shiite, and you're a Sunni, and, you know, designations. From the I comes the mind. That's the proprietorship. And the message is to cut that false sense of proprietorship so it can be like the sun that's reflected on the water. While the things are moving around, we're not identifying with those things. We may act in an appropriate manner according to the circumstance, but we don't identify with the circumstance and our happiness and stress created by the circumstance. Just serving or serving or serving or serving or serving or serving and happy to be in service to the Supreme Lord in this way, that way, the other way. And it's Kali Yuga, so, you know, service can be, in general, more challenging than Satyuga. But it doesn't take away the principle of service. That can't be taken from the soul. And this is the message of the Bhagavatam, is to restore that tendency, that mood, the soul's awakened condition to service to the Supreme. With mind, it's exactly Bhagavad Gita's message. With mind detached to the Supreme, man mana, bhava mad bhakto. So So this possessiveness or proprietorship, false sense of it, it keeps the mind from thinking of Krishna. Because we're too busy maintaining stuff, and the false sense of being the proprietor and the happiness and distress that goes with all of that, and managing all those emotions. It's just illusion. There's still emotion in the life of devotion, but it's a whole other kind of emotion. And the choice of actions that we do, it's a whole other set of choice of actions. And the mood of do it for Krishna, emotion, or bhava, that the relationship with Krishna becomes possible. But as long as this I and mine conception is there, we're bound. We're prisoners in Maya's camp. So cutting the false sense of proprietorship is a big deal. And not as easy as just give stuff up. That's not the solution. The solution is a change of consciousness. So, there were two words, vikara and avikara, changing and not changing, changelessness. That's the soul, that's the sun that doesn't move by the movements of the reflection of the sun on the water. The sun is avikara, is changeless. The soul is changeless when there's proper knowledge and detachment, or devotion with knowledge and detachment. When bhakti is awakened, there's proper knowledge. So the soul is changeless, avikara. And then the other word was akartritvat. Very important, because that's what text 2 focuses on. Karta, we discussed, means doing. Akarta is you're not the doer. Big part of cutting possessiveness notion. Because you think if you're the doer, then it's dominoes. You're the doer, you're the proprietor. That's called fruit of activity. I do, I possess. I own, I'm the cause of the results of my action, I own the results of my action. That's the possessiveness. And now here I have the results of my action, and I'm utilizing it for, you know, our favorite activity, sense gratification, of different varieties depending upon, you know, one individual to the next individual. But the locomotive, the thing that's pushing and driving the whole thing is, well, it starts, I want to enjoy, pause, independently of Krishna. That's the root. The spirit of wanting to enjoy independently of Krishna, and they were given a package. They're given a, you know, this false ego. The first thing that we're given. Through false ego, we can think of ourselves as not who we aren't. And false ego, we're the cause of the results of our activity. We're the karta, we're the doer. False ego. And then, you know, possessiveness, proprietorship. So, akartrit vat, that ending vat is having the quality of, or say ness, having the quality of not thinking oneself the doer. Akartrit vat means not doing anything for sense gratification. When one does something at his own risk, there is a sense of proprietorship. And therefore a reaction. But when one does everything for Krishna, there is no proprietorship. And we're going to hear more about proprietorship. That's this next verse. No proprietorship over activities. You know, it's subtle. It's subtle. But it controls everything. It's the subtle that controls the gross. Proprietorship over activity. Well, what's the If that's the wrong position, what's the right position? We're just doing devotional service. We're the instrument of Krishna. We want to know what Krishna wants. We want to know how to do what Krishna wants. And we want to place our whole energy in that. Krishna is pleasing Krishna in a manner that Krishna wants. Doing the right thing in the right way for Krishna. Just to say it again, so for clarity's sake, there's opposition in the field of material conditioning to do that simple thing. Strong opposition. It's practically a stranglehold, or being choked with a bony hand around our neck that has us impelled towards fruitive activities. Even in the arena of devotional service. I think I'm the doer, and I'm the enjoyer of what I do. Same thing that people that aren't devotees are very busy doing. I'm the doer, and I'm the enjoyer of the results of what I do. And of course, I suffer the results of what doesn't go right. It's just because I didn't do it right, and I have to do it better, or somebody got in the way, and all those kinds of things. We can do the same stuff in devotional service, under the banner of devotional service. So that's not, if we want our devotional service to become more what devotional service is, or less mixed and more pure, then this subject matter, we have to understand it and apply it and become free from the sense of doership. And with that, the enjoyership, proprietorship, doership, proprietorship, enjoyership. Boom, boom, boom. It's not just like, the message is not just for them, the karmis, those people. It's for us, the devotees, so we can, our devotion can become more pure. By changelessness, abhikaram, and by not claiming the proprietorship of activities, subtle point but very important point, akartritvat, one can immediately situate himself in the transcendental position in which one is not touched by the modes of material nature, the sun that's not being affected by the movements of water. Just as the reflection of the sun is unaffected by the water. So now, that's review. Now comes text 2. When the soul, under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his body as the self, he becomes absorbed in material activities, fruitive activities. And by the influence of false ego, he thinks that he is the proprietor of everything. So, purport. Actually, the conditioned soul is forced to act under the pressure of the modes of material nature. The living entity has no independence. Now, you could just, out of context, take that statement, living entity has no independence. It needs to be understood in context. We have minute independence. It's very minute. And it's being engaged with the external energy, being engaged with the internal energy. The choice of devotional service or forgetting Krishna and just being in illusion. But when we're in illusion, having made that free will choice, then we're moved like on a machine. Yanta rudhani mayaya. Machine made of material nature. It's like, when you get in your car and you're going down the road. You're sitting, but you're moving at however many miles an hour. Although you're just sitting, 30 miles an hour or whatever the number is. 60 miles an hour. you're moving. You've got your foot on the brake, and you have the gas pedal is there, and the brake pedal is there, and the steering wheel is here. So you have some freedom of, you know, whether it's 30 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, but the machine is carrying you. So similarly, the machine of a car doesn't impel you to go 60 miles an hour versus 30 miles an hour. The modes of nature do. People that are passionate can't drive slow. Zoom, zoom. It's like, you know, when being away from New York for some time, going somewhere, and then, you know that you're getting close to the city because everyone's driving faster. There's more cars and faster. Passion. You feel it. It's like, you know, probably those of you went to Gita Nagari. You're in Gita Nagari and it's like, whew, and you come back to the city and you feel the energy. It's different. And the people that live here, that it's just they're moved by that energy. The modes of nature are impelling. In that sense, the living entity has no freedom. We're being pushed. And we identify, and so we move as we're being pushed. When he is under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is free. But when, under the impression that he is satisfying his senses, he engages in sense gratificatory activities, he is actually under the spell of material nature, like a dream. Not that kind of spell, or same. I mean, in our dreams, we're not in control of anything. It's like, whew. And this is another dream, a daydream. There's a night dream and there's a daydream. We're under the spell of the illusory energy. We're thinking independent. We're not. Spell of the illusory energy. In Bhagavad Gita it said, Prakrite Kriyamanani, one acts according to the particular modes of nature he has acquired. Guna refers to the qualities of nature. It's in the verse. So it's being discussed in the purport. What's the action of these modes of nature? Go back to that metaphor of the sun and the water. Well, it's the movements of the water. If we identify with being a product of material nature, we're moved by the movements of the modes. And if we're in knowledge, we're not. Even though we may be in the midst of the material world. It's how to extricate ourselves from the implication of being here. He is under the qualities of nature, but he falsely thinks that he is the proprietor. What's the relationship between guna, the modes of nature, and proprietorship? You'll hear this word proprietor again and again, so there's a reason it's again and again, and it's important for us to understand what it means or how it impacts upon us. He is under the qualities of nature, but he falsely thinks that he is proprietor. Like, so Krishna is the proprietor, and the modes of nature are working under his direction, and we think, no Krishna at all, just, you know, I'm a nice person and I'm polite, or I'm the kind of person who gets irritated and I let people have it because I don't want to be taken advantage of, or and all of those things that are thinking I'm independent, but it's actually the modes of nature acting. And we're just being moved around by the modes of nature. Like a piece of wood floating on the sea. If the wave goes up, it goes up. If the waves go down, it goes down. Just being moved by the modes of nature. That's... And so the proprietorship is, I'm causing this, and someone else is bringing about that. It goes on, you know, like, let's say, the arrangement for taxes on the highway, or, you know, the toll system. It's just like that. There's the government makes highways, they spend some money, and they want to get the money back. So they set up toll booths. So we just, like, pay the toll, because you can't use the highway unless you pay the toll. Or if you use the highway without paying the toll, you get a penalty. You keep doing it, and you're going to be in clinker. So it's just like that's, you know, that's an example. So we just obey the law. But it's okay to build highways and even to have tolls for the highways. But who is the doer and who is the proprietor? It's maybe very, you know, for some people, it's debatable or very insignificant or whatever. But seeing all of that minus Krishna puts one under the spell of the material nature. We're the proprietor of the funds that come into the government. We're going to decide how it's going to be spent. And, you know, we're the citizen that has to pay the taxes and pay the toll. We can't use the road. And the whole world of illusion goes on without God consciousness. So we're controlled. There's, you know, the cheater and the cheated, as in Bhaktisiddhanta's language. The world is made up of two groups of people. And we're all, you know, in different camps at different times. Sometimes we're the cheater, sometimes we're the cheated. And we're all being cheated. We're cheating ourselves. So structure is not the problem, or, you know, any other thing you can think of. You know, relationships within the family, or between families, or in the community, or with the temple, or, you know, in your workplace, or, you know, life. The false sense of proprietorship rules our life and material consciousness. And still we're thinking ourselves independent. Maya is very clever. And transcendental knowledge is trying to help us see the show and step out of it. This false sense of proprietorship can be avoided simply by engaging oneself in devotional service under the direction of the Supreme Lord or his bona fide representative. Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was trying to accept for himself the responsibility for killing his grandfather and teacher in the fight, but he became freed from that proprietorship of action when he acted under the direction of Krishna. He fought. But he was actually freed from the reaction of fighting, although in the beginning, when he was nonviolent, unwilling to fight, the entire responsibility was upon him. That is the difference between liberation and conditioning. The conditioned soul may be very good and act in the mode of goodness. So here we're getting a distinction between religious piety and transcendence. Another small matter. It has to do with seeing Krishna or not. And in specifically in the sense of doership, I'm a pious soul, I give in charity and I help people and me. And I do it for God. So I'm religious. And then there's another mentality, a transcendental mentality. What's the difference? A conditioned soul may be very good and act in the mode of goodness, but still he is conditioned under the spell of material nature. A devotee, however, acts completely under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Thus, his actions may not appear to be of a very high quality to the common man, but the devotee has no responsibility. Just the efficacy is not very responsible. People might get the wrong idea. And it's not just simply actions, or the process of bhakti is not mechanical, like a vending machine. No, there's a vending machine, there's stuff inside the machine, you put in the coins, pull the lever, and down comes what you want. Bhakti is not a vending machine. It's not a mechanical process. It's not just do good things, do the do's and avoid the don'ts. We're obliged to do the do's and avoid the don'ts. But it's not just a mechanical process. Bhakti is something else. Like the discussion last night with this Jewish lady. Bhakti is the purpose behind the doing the do's and avoiding the don'ts. It's pleasing Krishna. And it's not a platitude or some cosmetic message. It's something that's inside you. All of what we're doing in devotional service, the training that we're receiving and the chanting that we're doing and everything that we're doing, associating with one another and serving at the temple and, you know, and raising our families and doing stuff, there's a purpose, pleasing Krishna. So one can do all the stuff and not get it, not do it for Krishna consciousness. Bhakti, we may be slow in awakening bhakti. A discussion since I've been here won't identify who or when or anything, but someone was sharing. They feel that they've, while being engaged in devotional service for some number of years, they're not really progressing, and they want to progress. So I ask them, how strong is the doership tendency in your life? Pretty strong. So the doership tendency checks at progress, because with the doership comes the proprietorship, comes the, you can't focus your mind on Krishna. You can't do things for Krishna because you're thinking you're doing things. You follow? And someone even can, like, it's quite common, I maintain my doership mentality and call it devotional service. Well, there's some devotion if there's like, I'm in my doership mentality for Krishna. It goes on a lot. But it's an incomplete expression or manifestation of what bhakti is. And one will not feel very satisfied. And one will not be satisfying in their dealings with others. And Krishna will not be so attracted either. So he shared with this person, Krishna is being very kind because they're not allowing you to delude yourself into thinking I'm this nice advanced devotee while I'm holding on to, very strongly holding on to, a doership mentality. And just to connect with Prabhupada's language, the proprietorship mentality. Proprietorship of the activities. I own the activity, and therefore I own the result of the activity, and therefore I'm expecting honor and praise from others. At least a little bit. And like Rabindra Saruprabhu was sharing in Gita Nagari, even when we try to become free from that by trying to become humble, we then become proud of just see how I'm humble. It's pernicious. It's like a stain that doesn't go away. So bhakti is something that's free from that. Amanitvam adambitvam. The items of knowledge indicated in Bhagavad Gita. The first two. Pridelessness. Or amanina amanadena in Shikshastakam 3. ready to offer respect to others with no expectation of respect in return. No sense of proprietorship, no sense of owning the activity. So bhakti is the antidote. It's not by knowledge alone that that's going to happen, or any other kind of adjustment that you want to make, like, you know, self-improvement. Very popular in bookstores. I'm not so knowledgeable about it, but there are devotees that study these things when they think of, you know, what literature should be made available in articles to write and things. Self-help books are really popular. Improve yourself without God. And it's you know, something happens, but the bondage of false ego just takes another shape. The bondage of false ego we want to become free from. Again, the language, proprietorship of activities. Doing the doer. Kartaham itimanyate. Even in the realm of devotional service. So what's the proper position? Well, knowledge certainly helps, but bhakti is really the driving force. It's I'm simply an instrument. And if I want to be a rather than a dull instrument, a useful instrument, then I need to awaken, I need to act in spiritual conception that Krishna has desire. That desire is indicated through scripture and via the disciplic successions, or those that are guiding us in our spiritual life, and I do that with faith as the instrument of Krishna. And how things come out, that's up to Krishna. We certainly do our Krishna conscious best. That's our effort, but not our effort is creating the result. Thinking that my effort is creating the result is the proprietorship of action. And we're, you know, that's bondage. It's delusion. And one more time, what's the other position? I'm the instrument. Nimittamatram bhava savyasachin, Krishna says to Arjuna. Very fundamental devotional principle. So even in the arena of our life of devotion, we're chanting, we're, you know, right here, it's early in the morning before you go to work, we're sitting here hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We're doing something. In doing something, we're helping to sharpen or qualify ourselves to be Krishna's instrument, and then from here we're going to go and do something else. Many of you go off to the office and do something in the office, and, you know, ladies, you know, do something for the family in the house, and say, we're going to do something. So the consciousness of devotion is, I'm Krishna's instrument, I'm his tiny part and parcel. He wishes that, you know, so many things, and his happiness is my meditation, fulfilling his will as his instrument, not the doership kind of fulfill his will, but as his instrument, depending upon him. I'm going to make some endeavor. Chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita, there's five factors of action. One is some endeavor, so I'm making some endeavor. But that's not it. That's just one fifth of it. And that's what I can do. I can make some endeavor. But for how things come out, Krishna is the proprietor. He decides it. And I'm at his mercy. But he's very merciful, especially to his devotees. So let me try to strengthen the devotional element of being here, hearing the class, and going out and doing the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, and then so on. Not for salvationist kind of idea. Let me get out of here. These people are crazy. I don't want to be part of the crazy world. Rather, for the sake of devotion to Krishna. Awakening, this, the life in devotion is an opportunity to awaken our devotion. Strengthen that more and more and more. And then that carries one into the details of one's eternal relationship with Krishna. By doing that properly here, that's the opportunity that we have, nurtured by hearing and chanting and applying those things that we hear. It's fantastic. We're very fortunate. Okay, I'll end, see if there's any discussion, questions. Yes.
Thank you so much for explaining the different aspects and how they connect to the actual Supreme Source, Krishna. Because the normal tendency is to see in a disconnected mode and say, okay, these things are there, it's there, I'll just use it for my enjoyment. And then a little spiritual understanding, okay, oh, I am not supposed to use all these things, I am supposed to be detached from that and then reject it artificially, like the
back and forth.
But the actual perfection is to use these things and the, even my activity in relationship to Krishna for His pleasure.
So there's some appreciation. Do you have a question?
Yes, Maharaj. But when the actual thing comes, without doing it in the doership consciousness, it is pleasing to the heart, and also the devotees who are doing that activity together, they also feel the same thing. But conversely, when I'm doing it in the doership mentality, it's...
Nobody's satisfied.
Yeah, it's satisfied and it becomes an unpleasant thing.
So what's the question?
Question is, in such a situation, if I'm doing it, if a devotee comes and taps me on the shoulder, there seems to be some unpleasantness in the interaction, how should I process it? And second question, if I am in the situation where another devotee is performing an activity like that, what should be my mode?
Well, the answer to your question depends very much on the circumstance. It's not like, this is what you do here, and that's what you do there, and move on. It's very circumstance related. So, just what's universal is humility. That's the starting point. Rabindranath Ruprabhu expressed this so beautifully in Gita Nagari. Go back and hear it again. Humility, because that allows Krishna's influence to come in, and my false ego tendency to be diminished, the spiritual sense of humility especially, not just cringing, but spiritual humility. Pause. Take the mode of goodness break rather than the passion mode that generally drives us. And be reflective. Think in terms of scripture, think in terms of instructions that you received and so forth, and then seek either scriptural indication, what you've understood from scripture, what to do in these circumstances, or the training that you received, what to do in these circumstances, or super soul may guide you, or combination, so that you can move forward with spiritual intelligence, buddhi, rather than, you know, the modes of nature, just impelling your thoughts and feelings and speech and actions, whatever the next thing is going to be. So then it depends on the particulars. So those universal elements will help prepare you for, you know, perceiving according to the particular circumstances what is appropriate. Okay. Yes.
Thank you for clarifying internal proprietorship and material proprietorship.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Material things, material proprietorship, without knowledge, he is a false ego.
Yeah, well, it's a false renunciation.
And if we do that with knowledge, does it help to improve the, through reducing the internal potential?
Sure, sure. You act in knowledge and it gives realization, strength. You know, Krishna's mercy comes. Does that satisfy your question? So, practice it. So it's not just an event, but it's, you know, how you lead your life. Once upon a time, I thought about, gee, maybe I shouldn't act so false ego. But you cultivate that overall. And, you know, life gives its different opportunities and its challenges. How to do that, and, you know, different circumstances. But let it become a principle that is operative in your life. Some circumstances of life are easier. That's good. Easy ones are good. Some are more challenging. We get so challenged, we completely forget the principle and just get into this combative mode and struggling with material nature again. But practice the principle. Act in knowledge. And spiritual strength will come. Detachment will come, exactly as is stated here. Knowledge and detachment flow from devotion. So act, cultivate devotion, properly guided. Okay? Yes. Okay.
Then that force is because I'm thinking that I'm the doer.
Yes. That's a trick, isn't it?
So
we have to begin somewhere. You have to begin. You can't, you know, jump. It doesn't work. So from wherever you are, that's where you begin. And so the acknowledgement is by you, same as for all of us. Initially, it's with the doership mentality, and there's a little bit of discomfort, and, you know, it's a little whining and complaining about the discomfort, but we do it because we know it's good. It's like chanting japa. We chant japa because we know it's good for us, not because we have an attraction for the holy name. But we chant japa. And then we're chanting japa, and we're, you know, I'm doing it. Well, wait a minute, you know, that our teaching says something. So you just gradually keep moving. Gradually keep moving. You apply this message in the course of your devotional service. Even in the beginning, it's like I'm doing it with doership mentality. Let me cultivate the bhakti principle, because I can't artificially become like a perfect bhakta just like that. I have to work with where I am at. But you cultivate. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches that you should acknowledge your position, take the regulations according to your position, and aspire for the next successive position. So like that.
So by doing that, we get love towards Krishna.
Well, gradually we get purified. And in that purification, then the natural desire to be genuinely in service to Krishna, not just I'm going to do something consciousness, but doing for Krishna consciousness will awaken. Yeah, so the love for Krishna will awaken. But the medium that leads to that stage of love, prema is the mature stage, the medium is devotional service. Service with devotion. Service, doing something. Whoa, and then here comes Krishna. Into the picture, into my life, into my consciousness. And it grows. And so it starts with, you know, a seed-like thing, and then it grows. Up to the stage of love for Krishna, yes. Yes. It's a kind of. But it's, again, it's natural because we're not empty. We're, you know, we have desire. And, you know, we desire happiness, and that's the kind of happiness we get, some recognition. But it's an illusory happiness. It really doesn't bring happiness. But we're driven by it. It's the modes of nature. So you can't just trash it. Or beat yourself up or something. It doesn't work. You just have to grow the bhakti principle. And that when light becomes stronger, darkness is dispelled. So we can know it's not wholesome and relegate it to I regret. There's a really beautiful verse in 11th canto, where, I'll see if I can find it, but where it's paraphrasing how a devotee thinks, like you're just asking. The devotee thinks something to the effect that pure devotional real life in devotion to Krishna is like this. I recognize that's not my position. I regret that's I'm not there. And, you know, then the next part is what's really important. So I don't beat myself up or don't lament or don't, you know, whine and complain or something. But I acknowledge it. I feel regretful. But I go on with faith in the purifying nature of devotion. And aspire for that day when I can come to that position. Similar. We don't have to, it's not necessary to redefine what devotion is. Like bring the bar down and say, well, you know, that's it. And I'm here. And I, you know, but I can get there by the strength of devotion. That's like Rupa Goswami's Hope Against Hope from Nectar Devotion, Asha Bandha. I'm unqualified, but Krishna is very kind, and that's my hope. Or Krishna is supremely pure, and so by bringing myself, even in false ego, an expectation of getting some recognition, and that's nice, knowing even that's a contamination. Krishna is very kind. Krishna is supremely pure, and he will help me. That's my hope. It's faith in him and the process, sadhya and sadhana, faith that keeps us going. Enough, at least, that we continue our devotional service and continue the cultivation of bringing our attention to Krishna and what the standard of pure devotional service is. We're cultivating that under proper guidance. So then purification can come. But there has to be willingness to let go of that lower thing in favor of the higher thing. Recognize what it is and be willing to let go for the higher thing. And then gradually, love for Krishna will come. The stage of prema will come. That help?
Should be my position to really assist them.
It's similar to Raghunandan's question. How do we assist others when we see others in that same circumstance, when we know we're in the same circumstance? Humility. You know, don't put yourself forward as, you know, something you're not. I'm above that defect. You don't have to like advertise, I have this defect too, Prabhu. I mean, you can say that, but you know what's or not say that. What's important is humility. You know, how you regard yourself, not how others regard you. I know I'm not there, but I have faith in the standard, and let me be as exemplary as I can in my own behavior, and let me repeat the message in which I have some faith, given by this, you know, descending mercy through our disciplic succession. Our acharyas reveal it. And the principle, the most important principle for me to overcome myself and to be able to be of assistance to others is, according to scripture, it's the descending mercy that comes through saintly association or Vaishnava Sangha or Sadhu Sangha. On my own, you know, being tossed around by the waves of material nature, there's the hope, that descending mercy coming into my life through that opportunity to serve and associate. And that's, it takes away the doership, it takes away the proprietorship of activities. It says I'm an instrument. And that's nice, to be an instrument. And it's not just on me. Exactly the language that Prabhupada is using. You know, one takes the risk of doership. No, you know, don't. That's not advised. And doing nothing is not advised either. You know, try to cultivate be as you're working with others and with working with yourself. Receive mercy from descending sources as Krishna provides his mercy that way. We heard this in Gita Nagari. And then act accordingly as an instrument of that mercy. To the degree that I can have received it, I can distribute it. I'm just a distributor. I'm just like, you know, an agent of this mercy. And then we can get proud, oh, I'm an agent of mercy. But you know, that the tendency is there. Anything else? Yes.
One small question.
Yeah.
Like if we take an application to read the Bhagavatam every day, then can we, I mean, like apart from listening to the morning Srimad Bhagavatam classes, can we read during night?
Yeah.
Because I heard somewhere saying that we should not read Srimad Bhagavatam during night.
So during night?
Yeah, like before sleep or something.
Really?
I
don't know. I never heard that one. You ever heard that one?
No.
Okay. Satatam kirtayantomam yatantascha dhritarata. That's what Krishna says. Satatam. He doesn't say, except at night. Satatam kirtayantomam. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the Prabhupada. Ki Jai.